Welcome to the Porsche Club Insider, your one stop for all things Porsche and PCA. Here's your host, Vu Nguyen, and the Insider crew.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 33. Around the table, we have Manny Albin, Damon Lowney, and of course, Robert's behind the computer making everything happen for us. Man, I had a great weekend. How about you guys?
Yeah, it's the weather in New Jersey where we were at was awesome. They couldn't have asked for better weather for a Porsche event.
I wasn't sure I was going to be able to go to Boardwalk Reunion because we were supposed to be in Chicago to do some filming. But unfortunately, that got canceled, or fortunately, it got canceled because I got a hall pass to go to Ocean City, New Jersey.
And before we get into that, though, Damon's chomping at the bit to tell us news.
Oh,
is well, it auto- news. Oh, am is I? It I don't want to seem too desperate to say how well I did.
Autocross news.
Yeah, so last autocross for the SCCA WDCR region, and this was my fastest run. And I went from fourth place in the local championship to third. So I passed the guy who was right in front of me. So, and if you watch this, this was my first run. We had four runs on Sunday, and every single run after this went slower. I kept making mistakes. So
that's the worst when your first run's your best.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to figure out what you messed up that you can't improve on. You want to improve.
Yeah.
Not, I hate that when the first run's the fastest.
Well, it's interesting, too. You know, Manny was asking where I kept my excuse book, and it's in the glove box, apparently. But it's kind of funny. You have to pay attention to things like track surface. Even in autocross, you'd think in a parking lot you wouldn't have to think about marbles or things getting on the track. But you know, I came off of this first run and I knew it was good, and the time it was a pretty dang quick first run, and I knew where I could improve. But I went out there and you know I went offline to try and take a wider line, stay on the gas a little bit longer. But I went right over a bunch of dust and stuff because it was off the line at everybody else was taking. And I just couldn't, bring it back.
You got third place in the class for championship.
Yeah,
third place. You were telling us yesterday.
A participation award, in a sense, because I showed up.
Third place is very good. but you were telling us that it was actually an exciting finish because he was hovering between third and fourth.
Yeah.
And he needed someone who was in.
Yeah, I had 28 points. The other person had 30. This other person had attended every single autocross. And I thought you were required to have two drops, meaning you dropped two of your slowest times or you know, finishes, points events. Yeah. It was actually three. So I thought that I had gotten 9 points for finishing second on Sunday, which would bring me up to 37 points. And he finished in fourth. So I believe that would have given him 6 points. And I beat him by like 1 or 2 points.
Nice.
But because there were three drops, it was 35 for me and 30 for him.
Oh.
So I actually was in a much better spot.
Somebody's wife decided or ran and they finished.
So this is another one of those things of, you know, there's always a bigger fish. And, there's an autocrosser out there with an ND2 Miata, Craig Marhefka, and he and his wife, Cindy, go out and they autocross, you know, with all the different regions and car clubs. And so my time was a 52.973. He and I was 37th out of 145 people.
Mm-hmm.
So not bad. He got a 50.3 and was third behind a shifter cart and some crazy guy in an S2000.
Wow.
And then everything else, all sorts of machinery.
I've seen both of them drive. They're amazing. And the car looks pretty, like, I know it's not stock, but it looks very stock. It looks like a burgundy.
It's simple bolt-ons. You know, STR, it's a great class. It's kind of like production, or maybe if you're on the low end of improved in PCA, you know, suspension, maybe transmission mounts. You can go to sticky 200 treadwear tires. But not a ton of stuff, but enough to make it handle just a bit better.
Yeah,
but Craig's an amazing driver. His wife is also an amazing driver, but I edged her out by a little bit. So she came between me and the other guy.
Oh,
so,
cool.
So what are you going to do for the next year for the car?
I'm going to get different tires. So for anybody who's considering Yokohama AO52s, they are awesome. I love them. They're my favorite tire. But if you only have, and this is with camber plates on my car, I could get more camber, and I have some things that maybe I'll try out in future years. But if you have negative two camber, you're going to be eating through the edge of your tires in, I think it was 16 or 17 autocrosses and maybe 1,000 miles of street driving. Tires are basically done.
So did you finish? Didn't you have a pulley project?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I totally forgot about that. On Friday, I updated to an underdrive pulley that harmonically damped. And, you know, if you own a 986 or a 987 and you decide to put a lightweight flywheel onto it like I did, a billet lightweight single mass flywheel, the engine harmonics change and they can potentially damage your engine. Doesn't happen a lot, but it has happened. You know, I've heard stories, I've seen stuff on forums, I've talked to some people in the industry who deal with that type of stuff. And if you do put a lightweight flywheel on, you want to balance it off with a damped, you know, heavier, harmonically damped underdrive pulley or regular size pulley, doesn't matter. But something to get rid of those vibrations and hopefully extend the life of your engine.
So I saw you climbing around. You took out your passenger seat to get to it. The tolerance or in which you had to slide in, like the sockets and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's tight.
You weren't struggling, but it wasn't a breeze either.
Later on, just so Vu came and took a look at my work. I think I was probably halfway through, or I don't think I had started to grind off the timing boss yet. I don't think.
Grind?
Yeah, I know. What? You have to grind some things. So
really?
So the regular pulley is larger than the underdrive. And there's a hole where you put like a little bolt or a tool that holds the
top
crank. And yeah, exactly. So you can actually take off the crank pulley bolt.
Yeah.
With a smaller pulley, that's covering up the boss, which sticks up. So you have to cut it off, you know, basically grind it down. And you have a different sort of tool to hold it. So the tool that was provided in the kit will fit if you're doing this on a 911, like a 997, for example. But with the room I had, I couldn't. So I had to put it into fifth gear, pull the parking brake, and do the tightening that way, which not the right way to do it. It's something I'll have to address in the video. And I'm going to go back and I think I know what I need to do over the winter to retighten that, which, you know, my crank pulley seal is actually leaking, so I have to go back in there anyway. Okay. It's a little bit wet.
I noticed your original belt was not in the best of condition, it was a good thing that you went in there.
Yeah, I put that on 15,000 miles ago when I first got the car, and it's got tiny little chunks on the outside taken out of it. Like, not like something was maybe catching and scratching every once in a while. It's not all over the whole belt, but so I'll have to keep an eye on that. Don't know what it is.
Yeah, and the nice thing about, actually for 911s as well as for Cayman Boxers, it's pretty easy to inspect your belt. And now that you're going into the fall, you know, if you're going to be changing your oil, just take a look at your belt. Because if you can see some cracks or some wear marks, it's totally worth it. It's an inexpensive thing to change. And it's one of those things that if it goes, it can leave you stranded.
Yeah. And doing the work yourself, you know, just doing the pulley. I already bought a crank pulley seal, but I knew I wasn't going to be taking the time to do it. You know, when I installed the underdrive pulley, it wasn't really leaking anywhere. It was just, you could see the oil was starting to dampen the seal. So I know now, you know, this winter, once the next two autocrosses are done, I'll be parking the car, taking the oil out for a change, but I'll also be doing the seal at the same time. So it's nice. You know, you get to know your car a little bit better and plan for future maintenance.
Very good. So,
a lot of fun.
So anyway, congratulations. That was for SCCA, it's pretty tough because that's the not just Porsche, it's all the other cars.
Oh yeah. And it's great to run against other cars and see what kind of times. And I think a lot of times when you go to these other events, people are pretty impressed about how well a stock Porsche does at an autocross. Like I seem to always get that comment. They're like, oh, what's done to your car? And I'm like, nothing, just, you know, tires really.
Yeah.
And
your car?
Well, yeah, my car's pretty stock.
What? Your car is like mine, only I have camber plates and you don't, basically, right?
My car's pretty stock.
My car's pretty stock.
Yeah.
It is.
Yep. It's not super modified.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyways, I think if I'm gonna have a chance of catching up to you, I might have to go to A7s. I think that's the quickest and the best bang for the buck to possibly catch you. But I miss not having enough time to do autocross this year. It kind of Yeah, too much travel. Yeah,
very busy.
Yeah, but I was happy that, you know, I was able to borrow Loanne's Boxster for the ride up. Rode up with Tom Gorsuch. He and his wife were in town, and we drove up to the Boardwalk Reunion about 3 hours. And man, that is a great kind of touring car. I mean, it's fun to autocross too, but because it's very stock, save the motor.
Nobody's gonna check.
Whose definition of stock?
It's just a great driving car. I mean, it's just a smooth. It's the reason why they're laughing. Excuse me, because
it only has 0.4 liters of extra displacement.
Yes, it originally was a 2.5 liter motor. It's actually now a Jake Raby 2.9 with very special internals and stuff. And it's just, but it looks completely stock. But it's
that such doesn't a, make it stock just because it looks stock. It looks stock,
but it's such a great car. So, anyways, yeah. So, getting up to Ocean City, New Jersey, and I missed last year's. This was the third annual, although the very first Boardwalk Reunion, or it was actually an event like it, was when
the registry had their holiday
there. So, so this was an amazing event. We had they met up at the local airport, 360 or so Porsches, and then made their way over to the Boardwalk and parked all the cars on the Boardwalk, and it was just a great sight. And man, it couldn't have been a better day.
So actually, my wife got up there on Thursday because she really likes Ocean City, New Jersey, so she wanted to go early. The plan was originally I was going to go too, but like you said, we were going to we found that we had to film in Chicago a tech video. So when that didn't work out, I still had some work to do down here. So she went up on Thursday, and I went up with you on Friday.
I was literally your Vuber.
You were my Vuber. And she got I got to mooch off her because she got a room with the volunteers. And she was in the organizers, Bob and Ellen Gutyar. And they had a condo, I guess, on the top level of this hotel, the Flanders Hotel. There's four rooms. We got the kids' room. And it took me a day to realize we were in the kids' room because the sink, I'm going to say, was maybe 10 by 12. I'm not exaggerating. And then I realized that this is where they put the kids at. And this, but it was free, so I can't complain. And we got to see, you know, inner workings. Part of the entertainment is watching the complex relationship between Bob and Ellen as far as the organization and getting things done. But they had a pizza party on Thursday night for all the volunteers. They did some bag stuffing and some final details. And like you said, we met at the airport, Ocean City Municipal Airport, was the staging area. And this is the third year, and every year Bob needs to be there 6 o'clock. Even though no one else needs to be there, but he wants everyone there at 6.
Cars aren't supposed to come until what, like 8:30?
8:30, yep.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, and they're not like lined up by model, or it's not like Works Reunion or Sports Car Together where we got to mark parking spaces. And true to form, we wait outside for 30 minutes for the guy to show up to open the door. And every year, Bob's like, if he doesn't show up, I'm going to lose it. And of course, when they stand by the gate, looks like they're at the border trying to get across. And the guy comes, opens it up, and we rush in and wait for everyone to show up. But luckily, the weather was beautiful, so it wasn't bad waiting. And part of the fun really is hanging out there for 2.5-3 hours, drinking coffee and
seeing all the cars.
Oh yeah, you got all these people, and the cars are close together, and you can hang out, meet new Porsche people. And it's amazing, you know, I think about it. That really thing, only thing everyone has in common is that they own a Porsche.
Mm-hmm.
And yet immediately, you know, you just walk up to someone, you can start a conversation just because you have that common thread of owning a Porsche. And unlike Corvettes, where it's just one model, here, yeah, people have Cayennes, Macans, Panameras, everything that Porsche made, including a 924 Turbo, which mm-hmm. I told the owner, you're probably going to be the only one here with that car, was present.
And I saw families, which were cool, and you know the kids were having fun. And, you know, they come in, they get a Dunkin' Donuts, and parents get the coffee. They're walking around looking at all these amazing cars. And then once they got onto the boardwalk, then now you have the general public sort of admiring the cars, and the boardwalk was full. I mean, you kind of had to turn your shoulders walking down the boards because it was just packed, and it was a lot of actually probably most of the stores were open, so you still could do your sort of you know, beach shopping. And the best part was we got to try that hot pizza. What was the name of that place?
Manco and Manco. Manco. New Jersey evidently knows this place. I mentioned to somebody, I said, we went to eat pizza at this really cool place. And he goes, Manco and Manco. I said, I think that was it.
Yeah, they have like this, these two rotisserie kind of ovens. And man, they were cranking out.
Mesmerizing.
It looked like two big money machines because they would put dough in there and pizza would come out.
It was like every 4 minutes there.
Lines and lines of people. Wow. And it was delicious.
So what I also thought was interesting was... So this boardwalk's a fairly good size for those of you who's listening who don't have boardwalks or don't live near the ocean or a body of water. And they said that the tenants of these stores get upset if they're not included in the line of cars. So they want to make sure that the cars are spread apart to where it reaches their stores.
Oh.
And I thought for some reason it was the opposite. I'm thinking, I wonder if they get pissed because we're, you know, not blocking the store, but we're taking space in front of the store, and it's the opposite.
Oh, they really?
They want people to be walking, looking at, want to walk down and look at the cars, and they may stop and go in the store.
Yeah.
So, I think it was Ellen was telling me that they got, or Bob, they were saying they got to space it to where they have to reach a certain street because they've told all these tenants that they can open up their shops because the show will be part of it. And they advertised way ahead of time that we're going to be there. So that's why when we came up on the boards, there were so many people lined up already taking pictures of the cars coming up. And everybody behaved themselves. No one did anything stupid.
Well, there were little. So I took the video where the cars were coming onto the boards there. So when I first got there, I saw this young kid wearing a martini hat to the right of the rails that you're looking at on YouTube. And I thought he was with someone in the parade waiting for that person to come on the board. So I started talking to him and say, hey, how are you doing? You know, are you here with someone? What car are you looking for? He's like, no, I just love Porsches. I'm like, you came to this and you don't have anybody in the parade or anything? He's like, no. I was like, well, you're obviously an enthusiast. You're wearing a martini hat. He goes, I was here last year and someone gave me the martini hat. Well, so I had my parents drive me back so I could be here this year to see it. And of course I said, so what's the car that you're hoping to see? He's like, I hope to see a GT3. And he got his wish. He got to see a good number of GT3s. And he was so excited. Someone dropped their flag, and we have replacements. I'm sure they got a replacement. And I scooped it up and I gave it to the kid, and he was so excited. He was probably like a eighth grader, ninth grader, but hopefully that's, you know,
that's one where the seed is exactly started.
The seed is planted, right? So here where the boards are coming up, I will tell you that, and I shared with Bob that maybe we need to cross or block off the lines, because usually people ride their bikes on the boardwalk and they announce it, and I'm sure they've told people a million times, but you always get someone that doesn't listen, right? And they got all upset because they couldn't ride their bikes on the boardwalk.
Even though they're making announcements
saying make your way off.
Bicycles, you have to come off the boardwalk once the Porsches are on. But
yeah, so there's always a couple.
For those of you who are thinking about attending this event, you're not too far away. Although there's that ferry that people from Virginia were taking.
Over to Lewis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So people came from like 7-8 hours away. And it's a fun event because there's no competition. It's Scott Johnson. I told him I would say this on a podcast. He called it Parade in the Day. That's really accurate.
The spirit is.
It rhymes, but it's a lot of camaraderie. They have three tech sessions they do inside this one building right off the boards. I'm not sure how many people actually made it because it was beautiful weather. If it rains, I'm sure the tech sessions will be popular. But they did do three tech sessions while the event was going on, and we never got to see the whole
show. So Manny and I, we came prepared to do some videos. We're going to give it to Damon here to edit, but we picked probably 10 or 11 of our favorite cars that we actually got to see. And to cover 360 some cars on the board, we did what, like 3/4 of the lineup?
Yeah.
I couldn't even record coming onto the boards. I tried to get everyone, but what happened was towards the end of the parade onto the boards, they got backed up and they actually had to stop for a while. So it just didn't make sense for me to sit there and wait for them to come on the boards. But we'll put together a video, share some of our favorite cars that we saw there. And then for those of you that were on the boards, you'll see the video where I record everyone coming onto the boards. And again, I apologize for not getting the last maybe 20 cars because they were just stuck there as they were waiting for it to clear.
What's Monkey Bread? I just saw that on one of the photos here.
Oh, I was very disappointed that Monkey Bread was closed.
Oh, I was super disappointed.
What are they? What is it?
Monkey Bread is like a biscuit kind of a thing with lots of cinnamon and sugar. Yeah. And
sounds
it just,
good.
It, oh, yeah, it is good.
Is that like a Ocean City sort of thing? Or
No.
It's just an amazing dessert bread thing that actually Justine makes an amazing monkey bread.
Like, Damon has lived a very deprived life when it comes to food.
There's a reason why he's skinny, because he doesn't know about monkey bread.
I don't know about monkey bread.
I'll have to ask Justine for the recipe and make it for you.
We kept on walking back and forth to see if they
were thinking it was
going to
open later, and I kept walking back. Never did.
But of course, when you hang out with Bob Gutjahr, it's never it's always an adventure with stuff that he does and things that happen to him. So he brought a speedster because I think the theme was something.
Oh, you're not going to go there, are you?
Of course, I got to.
Oh, no.
Speedsters and roadsters or something. Anyways, he brings his 89 speedster. And it's a beautiful car. I always like to tell people I babysat it for a summer. 6,700 miles. I think it had like less than 2,500 when I babysat it. And he had the top up on it because in the morning we had some more dew and it was a little bit cooler. And I looked at it, and the top wasn't, like, fully extended. There was just a little crinkle you could see in the rubber seal. And I said, I don't think your top's all the way. And he goes, no, it's just been like that. So, of course, we start looking at it, and you look from the inside, you can see that one of the bolts into the hinge was bent. Ooh. And
So the bolt was backed out, so therefore the frame of the top wasn't perfectly aligned. Mm. So it wasn't actually bent. It was just, you know, it looked bent because it wasn't fully tightened up because the bolt had backed out.
Somebody says, "Well, I got some tools you can use," and I'm like, "Bob, I'm like, listen, we're going to be leaving here in like 2 hours. I'm telling you, you start working on this, something's going to happen, and you're going to be able to put it down or put it up, and it's going to look like crap." Just leave it alone. Don't look at it. I'm sorry I even brought it up. And of course, he couldn't. So someone else removes the bolt, and like Vu said, it was gone. The bracket where the screw went into was done. It was stripped. So Ron Gordon, our future vice president, he's like, we got to tap a new hole. Bob does not know what tap means. He's like, well, how do we do this tap thing?
And that means it's not going to get fixed now.
No.
Right?
No. I mean, unless there's a Harbor Freight down the street. And...
No. No one's going anywhere.
I said, are you showing it with the top up or down? And he says, down. I'm like, well, there you go. I said, just put it down. And you're like, we said, you towed this thing, so you don't have to worry about driving it home. Of course, wants to take it down right then because he doesn't want people coming in to see it.
It did look pretty bad.
I'm like, the window's wet, the top's so wet. Just leave it alone. You got 2 hours to let this thing dry. Then you put it down. And you won't damn. So you don't want to make things worse with this window that's plastic and it's original. he left it halfway down, halfway
it
up.
Looked terrible.
While it dried. Of course, everybody now is really looking at it because you're walking by this
photos. Piece. I took photos of the four of you around it, and then took the photos of the aftermath, and it looks terrible. But I didn't know that you were going to talk about it today, so I didn't upload it.
Yeah, I took some pictures, too. I should have given Robert the...
But that's advice for those of you that are at events, and if you notice that there's something minor wrong with your car, don't try to fix it right then and there, because Murphy's Law, you're going to attempt to do it and make it worse, and then all of a sudden, you're stuck.
There's a lot of people who look like they were concoring their car, and I was thinking, this is no judging. We're just parking on the on the boards, and that's it. It's a pretty relaxed event, because my wife was like, should I wash the car? And I said, what does it look like? She goes, it looks clean. I'm like, leave it alone.
It's, yeah.
Said, I brought cleaning supplies as an emergency, not something that you have to do as soon as we get there.
So I left midday on Saturday. You stuck around.
Because your hall pass ran out?
My hall pass was running out. I needed to be home before dinner, which I did. You stuck around. There was an evening banquet.
Yes, it was much larger than last year. Last year was pretty big, about 300 people.
That's awesome.
So let me ask you something. Is prime rib considered the best cut?
No.
I didn't think so.
I'm the wrong person to ask.
I would say ribeye, right?
Yeah, ribeye. To me, a ribeye or a filet is probably.
A porterhouse is a ribeye and a filet, right?
That's like the whole shebang.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but usually that is like the holiday, you know, the holiday protein that's like
what's
tender.
That ribeye?
No, the one that you had at the party.
Oh, prime rib.
The prime rib.
Prime rib. Yeah.
Because I asked Bob what's on the banquet, and he said prime rib. I said, it's what we had last year.
Yeah.
And he said, but it's the best. It's the best cut of beef. And I said, I don't think it is. And he was saying,
I like prime rib. I like prime rib. It's not the best.
It's okay. It's a little bit. Sometimes I guess maybe because it's a banquet, the cuts I always get have a lot of fat on them.
Oh, that's the best part.
Yeah, no, I avoid fat as well. I'm the same way.
I mean, I like flavorful fat, trust me. But
I just don't like the feeling when you're chewing fat. So it's got to be filet mignon or I cut around the fat on
say,
a
filets
like a
are like the least flavor because there's no fat.
Right.
Fat is like filets are it's nature's small. Butter.
And we're here we have digressed to our culinary attractions.
But no, the prime rib wasn't that bad this time.
And it was better than chicken, banquet chicken.
Oh, this is something else I learned. So every PC members are going to have a new vice president next year, Ron Gordon, currently the parade chair. Ron was traumatized by chicken because I said something like we should have fried chicken instead of I said that'd be a good change of pace. And he's like, no way. He goes, I'm not eating fried chicken. I'm like, what do you get fried chicken? I said, what, because of health reasons? He goes, no. He goes, I don't eat chicken.
I didn't realize that.
Who doesn't eat chicken? And he's like,
chicken or no, just chicken? Any chicken, really?
So, of course, I've got to ask. I'm like, what's up with chicken?
They get attacked by a chicken at some point?
And he said his mother would always overcook it.
Oh.
And his father would do the same thing on the barbecue. Basically, cook it to the point it was almost dust.
Oh.
That's how dry it was.
Oh.
So you keep chewing and chewing and chewing.
I could understand if that's a chicken you're eating that you would never want chicken.
So I'm like, so you haven't tried a good fried chicken? And he's like, he goes, I go to that place near the office, your guy's office. And I said, Royal Farms? And he goes, yeah. He goes, I've tried that. They're not too bad.
Yeah.
He goes, but it's never my go-to. He goes, I try to avoid it.
All right. Here's my question for you guys and the listeners. White meat or dark meat? Go.
Well,
doesn't matter. So both, yeah.
No, you see.
Whoa,
30-inch waist boy doesn't.
Also, here's the. I used to like the white meat, but then I realized that dark meat wasn't like dirty or whatever. It was just
dark
more
meat
flavorful.
Is the best meat.
So yeah, no,
it's the most flavor.
Most flavorful.
I'm not picky.
Yeah. He's not picky about food. That's why he's skinny. He
that's right.
It's just was it sustenance to him?
I eat when I'm hungry.
Yeah, it's.
If that was the case, I'd be skinny.
White meat doesn't have much flavor to it.
Yeah.
It's the dark meat.
It can, though. It can. I've had good white meat, but very rarely is white meat good.
Yeah, but then you got to put a lot of...
You have to, was it brine it and all that?
So I like sauces. So I put sauce on anything anyway. So it probably doesn't matter what kind of meat I eat.
No, because there's still the moisture of the meat itself. Like you take a dry piece of chicken and put it
white
in sauce.
White meat's chewier, and if you get it wrong, it's...
And it just like sucks the...
But anyways, I thought that was interesting about Ron that he's been traumatized by chicken.
Well, if you notice, I don't think we've had a chicken or very many chicken dinners at parade. He's pretty adamant about not having chicken.
I don't
disagree with him. I'm not a fan.
So instead, we go to what did we have like four times?
Short ribs.
Short ribs are good.
I was like, wow, they must have bought like a whole tractor trailer load of short ribs. That we're having it every night.
Oh.
I can say that I've never had a banquet dinner at parade that I haven't enjoyed.
They're all good.
I've always liked the food.
Yeah.
Usually it's great.
Yeah.
So even chicken, we've had
it's good or exceptional.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
You walk in with a lowered expectation.
Because think it's a banquet.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, usually
people who complain
awesome.
Are the ones who think they're going to get a Michelin meal at a banquet.
We definitely do tastings or the parade. Actually, all our events, especially Treffen, like food is so important to our members. Like, we don't go to places if their food is bad.
Yeah.
And if they do something, if they promised us one thing and they delivered something else, that's no bueno. Like, that's a big deal. So I did fun in the garage. Oh, last time we talked about how I installed Termignoni exhaust on my Ducati.
I'd have to look at the word.
Okay. Anyways, I told you that they had inserts, and of course the thing didn't come with instructions. I didn't realize it, and it sounded good when I first installed it, but my buddy was like, did you take the inserts out of the exhaust? I'm like, I didn't know it had inserts. Sure enough, it had inserts. I don't know if Robert has the photos of those, the mufflers on the motorcycle, but yep, two screws, pulled out the inserts, and oh my goodness, it's basically like going from non-sport exhaust,
From my car to Connor's car.
But it sounds good though.
Hey, I think Connor's car, for the record, Connor has an M2, basically straight pipes. It sounds good.
Exhaust sounds good?
Yeah, it sounds good. No, and it's very loud.
This is his white meat is better argument.
No.
Oh, gosh.
No.
Although, your Toyota sounds better in the tunnel
than
his car does. It does, because you least have some bass, some lower tone.
Yeah. His car has no lower tone.
It's like a weed whacker without any exhaust.
And it's not a thing on the BMW. It's just, I think the exhaust he had on it sounded better than the exhaust he put on.
Is that his car normally aspirated or turbocharged?
His car?
Turbocharged.
His car's turbo.
Maybe that's why it
sounds
crappy.
Yeah.
Well, you can hear the turbo noises, and it sounds great. The only thing that doesn't sound good is like the track brakes, because they squeal. But exhaust, love it.
Someone's phone's ringing or shaking.
Oh, and that's Rob Sass calling me. I'll have to call him back.
All right. What else did you do Sunday? Sunday you stuck around. You didn't go home right away, right?
Yeah, because I had the wife, so we had to take things leisurely home. But I got home in time to watch the Ravens lose.
Oh.
Again.
Oh, that's sorry.
So far, I'd say. And what's worse is the Steelers won, so I'm not even comforted by the fact that they lost as well.
We did. You guys have 1 mile reviews coming up Thursday?
Saturdays. Thursday. So we were hoping to drive an 88 924S. I confirmed that can't happen next week. Probably sometime in November.
What about the Macan for the fourth one?
Macan when Vu is back in town, because I believe Vu, you're going to be in Vegas for work, and so we're just going
to
film later.
His Macan, or
you guys can drive it. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, maybe we can set it up. So we have three cars now. I think it's an 05 Turbo S.
I think he doesn't want me to drive it, because I drove the SC in the gravel, and then the way I pulled into the gravel lot, he's like, you better not do that in my Macan. I'm like, well, you know, no guarantees. He's like, maybe I'll have Manny drive it.
When did he get the Macan? I didn't know he had one.
So he did like this surprise. Oh my gosh, he's going to be so enamored that we mentioned his time. I think it's like the fourth time we've referenced him on a podcast. You're welcome, Paul. But he just does. He provides us content, and that's why we talk about him. But congratulations to him. I think he got a 2021 Macan S in carmine red with black interior. Oh, wow. And he's really stealthy about it. Like, I know he's been looking for a while, but he tries to, like, surprise you or tries to say, oh, I'm going to get one. I'm not going to get one. And then on Sunday, I was going to Cars and Coffee, and I saw the carmine red Macan coming in my direction. I'm like, oh, that's Paul. He got the car.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we should reach out to him. But yeah, it's a 05 911 Turbo S that has like GT2 clutch, a couple light mods that probably just improve
it's
driving feel.
One that he bought.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So an 05 Turbo S, a 991.2 Turbo S, which we've all driven, just never on a 1 mile review. And then, what's the last car?
Got my 914.
And your 914. Yep. So those are the three we have
driven.
You've
driven Rob's.
I drove Rob's. It felt great, except it was the worst shifter I've ever.
Now, what didn't you like about the shifter?
Is it the blue car?
You couldn't. Yeah, the blue car. You didn't really know what gear you were. You kind of stuck it somewhere and hoped it was the right gear.
I never drove it, but that has the later shifter.
Side shifter?
The better shifter.
Did it?
Mm-hmm.
It was. I've never driven a worse.
That's not to say that the bushings may have been gone.
Yeah.
Or
It was pretty much row back or forward and hope you got the right.
What other 901 transmission cars have you driven?
Probably not. I think the earliest 911 I've driven is Vic Rolla's old 72. That's the oldest 911 I've driven.
When did he switch over? Was it the mid? Was that
the 915? Vic would have been a 915.
Yeah. By then.
Yeah, because 901's a different different field than the 915.
If the 901's worse than what was in that blue car, I'll never own a car.
But like what I'm getting at, I guess, you know, you can't compare it to a modern car.
Yeah.
Like for my car, and any 914 owner knows this, and maybe unless if you just had your transmission rebuilt.
Yeah.
But from first gear, which is the dog leak to the left, to second, there's like half a second pause
in
the second gear. Otherwise, you're grinding gear. Because
So I've driven cars with 915s before, you know, like the rental 911 in Arizona a few years back. And that probably wasn't the best sorted transmission, but it wasn't bad. And Nathan Merz drove it, and he knows those cars well, and he told me it wasn't the best 915, but it was a heck of a lot better than whatever was in the 914. So I'm assuming there was something up with the bushings, but
yeah, like I remember, even though it was a long time ago, driving my 72 914, it's like, it's not defined.
Yeah.
And when you shift, you really have to take it easy. And then when you're putting it into the next gear, you go slow enough just in case you're not putting it into the right gear, cause it'll grind. Yep. And then you kind of adjust a little bit and then you put it where it should be.
You have to be deliberate.
What's in it? The 58 speedster that I drove? What transmission's in that?
It's a 4-speed.
Not a 901.
41 transmission. It's a regular 56. But, it's not a 9 series.
It's not a 9 series. Okay. But even like that one actually felt pretty good. Yeah. I think it all depends on, like a 901 or even a 915. A lot of these transmissions are well used and maybe not.
Need a refresh.
Haven't been refreshed in years. So I think it adds to the vagueness to it, but I think a well-sorted one, even in this 58, it was actually pretty easy to drive. You don't shift it like a modern car, but it wasn't hard.
Well, when I drove your G50 87, it felt much different than my 964 G50.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. But it's still light years ahead of some of these other transmissions.
Yeah.
So, anyways, it'll be looks like good weather for doing some one mile review.
Yeah, so speaking of well-sorted transmissions, the video, the one mile review that dropped on Saturday was Mia's Safari 911, and that one had an amazing 915 in it, and also a Wevo shifter. Mm-hmm. It felt every bit as good as my G50.
The first story I wrote out of college for another Porsche magazine, I did drive a hot rod 74 911 that had a 915 with the Wevo. And I remember that being a very nice and positive shifter. But so long ago.
Well, let's get into some Porsche news. And the first one, we're talking about the Macan EV.
Well, it's been delayed now till it's supposed to be 2023 when we saw it come out. Not because of supply issues, but evidently software development issues. Which, it's one of the reasons Herbert Dietz, XVW chief, got canned was because of development delays.
That was an issue with the ID3 and the ID4, the VW cars. The software seems to be their biggest.
Yeah. So I wonder how much is like, between the Volkswagen platforms that are all electric and then the Taycan platforms, the software. I mean, to me, it seems as though they have those platforms sorted, but how much does it change when it goes into a Macan?
The news that also came out was that a software update has increased the range of the Taycan, a pretty significant amount.
Yeah.
And so the Macan's going to use the same platform as the Taycan,
right?
The 800 watt system, and I think we're going to see this with EVs for the next decade. You're going to have a steep learning curve.
Yeah,
it's almost like someone doing driver's ed for the first time. I mean, every session they go out, they get huge improvements versus like somebody who's been doing it for 10 years. They might not even see an improvement just because they're doing more days. With EVs, we're going to see a lot of things almost monthly changing.
Technology.
As they discover more stuff and they're able to refine. I wonder if they were planning to debut this at Rennsport. Since it was a 2023 model.
Yeah. Maybe they still will. It just might not be
complete
by then.
We talked about how many chargers they're going to install at Laguna. So it would be great to have some prototype Macan EVs to shuttle people around.
Oh, yeah.
That would be a huge introduction to where you get people who are on the fence about an electric Macan, but see how quiet it rides and how much power it has.
So I'm very excited sort of about the electric future. I will love to have one day, but until then, I think we need to reflect on the recent Tech Tactics Live where we talked about non-petroleum oil, because I tell you what, while I was waiting for or watching those cars come onto the boards, there were some sweet sounding engines, from the modern water cooled engine to I remember seeing a couple of long hoods that had the smoothest sounding carbureted engines, and then some 356s that came on the board that just sounded like, you know, smooth sewing machines. Like, I'm going to miss that. But maybe this recent topic that we covered on Tech Tactics Live is going to extend our ability to enjoy internal combustion engines.
So you can find that on the same YouTube channel if you're watching YouTube, the podcast on YouTube, or just go to Porsche Club of America. It was I found it interesting. It was one of our vendors, but that's not the reason why we chose it as a topic. Otherwise, we'd have
we weren't paid to feature them. No. We were just curious about their technology.
Yeah, I saw when I was walking by the tent, I saw it said non-petroleum. That kind of piqued my interest. And so when we got back to the office, I Googled them and did some reading. And I thought it was really fascinating that it's basically a plant-based oil. But it's a lot of chemistry involved in science and how they isolate the molecule that makes oil what oil is, and or at least motor oil. And the show, it was insane how many questions there were going on. Mm-hmm. And Zach from Evolve, the company we were featuring, he was on the chat part answering questions. And there was a lot of interest, not necessarily people who are going to switch over, but, you know, they wanted to see what's involved with something that may be the future as we go to more and more green, renewable energy. Like you said, to extend the life of our cars. But I think events like Boardwalk Reunion will be where we'll show off the internal combustion engine. Because my wife asked me on the way home, she says, do you think we'll see the end of these gas cars in our lifetime? And I said, not in our lifetime. I said, but it'll be like these shows where we'll bring the cars out and people will ask us to turn it on.
Yeah.
And especially the older cars where you get to see everything moving and the fans and everything. And I said, and they'll be just like we are now. They're going to be just amazed that everything works in such perfectly time sync.
Yeah. In harmony.
In harmony and symphony. And it'll be pretty cool. Just like when we see horses. I mean, everyone loves to see horses. We're always amazed at their size and how strong they are. But there's more horses now than there was in the 1800s.
So one of the things from the show that really blew my mind, I never knew, was, you know, the synthetic oil that I put in my cars aren't truly, I mean, they're synthetic, but they're still petroleum based. I don't know why I didn't know that, but I didn't. I always thought, because you see synthetic oil, you're thinking, oh, it's probably made of something else.
Yeah.
But it's still petroleum-based. And that was the one sort of little nugget that I came away with. I was kind of like, oh. And then this new stuff that is plant-based, pretty cool. And I know some of you that watched the show asked, what was it, Lee? Lee was his last name.
Rick Lee,
questions that he couldn't answer directly because it's such a new technology and they have some NDAs and they're working, I'm sure, working with Porsche or other manufacturers in developing, further developing the oil and going through testing, but then also working on biofuel, right?
I was going to say, the fuel part is we would have loved to touch on that, but they asked us not to because they're still in the middle of working with Porsche, and there's a lot of proprietary information that they said they didn't want to touch base on that yet. But obviously, these manufacturers are all looking at renewable energies, and biofuel is a big thing.
The Haru Oni plant in Chile is where they're producing that now, and
that's the one Porsche has an interest in.
Yeah,
what's it called?
Haru Oni.
Haru Oni. Okay.
Yeah, HARUONI. And that's where I guess some of the race cars get the fuel that they use the race now.
Not the Carrera Cup Series, or one of them uses that exclusively.
Yeah, one of the Carrera, I think European Carrera Cup. I'm not sure if they're doing that here in the U.S., but if you think about it, you know, Porsche has been making so many special editions. And they're, you know, their best cars are very expensive, you know, and not a lot of people, you know, relatively speaking, can afford it. But, you know, as more people adopt EVs, my thoughts are is things like these synthetic fuels and synthetic oils are going to be what keeps those that 1%, 2% mm-hmm. of people who own these amazing cars that I personally think Porsche is going to keep making internal combustion engine cars, just a lot fewer, and they're going to cost a lot more, and mm-hmm. the fuel is going to cost a lot more if you want to enjoy that sort of experience.
Right, right.
Yeah, from a business standpoint, I don't see them making them. I see them go all electric from a business standpoint.
I think almost all electric, and then they're going to keep, I think,
one department, like a classic department. Yeah, making.
Exactly. They may be able to service them, but because they're not really even developing the GT3 engine anymore. It's staying the same horsepower. It's just aero.
Yeah.
Hey, how is this for development? Slap a couple turbochargers on it, and that's a development right there, huh?
It's. I mean, at least in our lifetime, and probably the next generation, at least, it'll still be around. Mm-hmm. And like you said, the sound is just intoxicating. I mean, you're not going to see minivans. I mean, when they die, they're going to go electric. Or pickup trucks eventually will go that way too. You know, the ones that have utility and functionality.
I mean, can you imagine Ferrari without a V12 car in their lineup in the future? I mean, that would be.
I think I heard one of the podcasts, maybe Smoking Tire, about how Lamborghini is nearing the end of their normally aspirated.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Normally aspirated. It's all going to be turbo.
Okay, turbocharged. Yeah. That's so fine.
But you know, one time everyone was like, no, it's got to be normally aspirated, but slowly changing around. But there's so many things in history. You look back at automotive that people said it was the end. You know, when unleaded fuel came around,
yeah,
you know, that was the end of engines. You know, you need the lead, and it's progress.
Well, speaking of time, speaking of awesome sounds, speaking of the GT3. And more specifically, the GT3 RS recently was in the news.
Oh, yeah, Jörg Bergmeister, I think, is an honorary PCA member.
Yes.
he was tasked with trying to get the most out of it. The weather was fine, and they were able to do some laps. It didn't break the production record, which goes to I think AMG Mercedes that was
twin, one of the black
twin turbo.
Yeah, so, and then there's a Lamborghini Performante. I think it. Was it an Aventador or a Huracan? But one of them. So basically, $649 and change for the new GT3 RS. I believe the stock non-Manti version of the GT2 RS from the previous generation that got like a $647 or a $648. So you know, just imagine. You know, the only reason I think the GT3 RS one that it went as quickly as it did was a downforce, but also on a long straightaway like this one. If you're watching the YouTube channel. Or at the end of the lap, you're losing so much time. You're going 15 kilometers an hour slower on the low end compared to a normal GT3. So just imagine when they slap a couple turbos on that and hopefully make a GT2 RS in the future. I'd be, I bet, below 640 for sure.
So that GT3 RS is faster than any ever produced Porsche supercar, right? It's faster than Carrera GT, faster than 918 Spyder, faster than...
Yeah, it's faster than a 918. That's a good point.
Right?
Yeah.
But the Carrera GT is old now.
I know.
You know, it's not a youngin' anymore.
But if you look at a Carrera GT, you just think that car has to be faster than
Carrera GT got, I think it was a 732 or a 734 in the first GT3.
Didn't the Turbo GT break the Carrera GT? Did Cayenne?
No, it was like short. 8 seconds slower. Okay. But I mean, goes to show. But like the first GT3 996, I believe Walter Roll did like right around 8 minutes back in the early 2000s. Then the CGT 732, and the 918, I think, was like 655 or something. So, 500 horsepower.
So, is the new GT3 RS faster than the previous GT2 RS?
No, it's like
it's still
a second or two at the Nürburgring slower.
Okay.
Yeah. It's all that downforce.
Yeah. But just think, they're going to follow suit and bring out the next King Kong.
We can only imagine.
Yes.
They've done it over and over the past decade, right?
They will.
Yeah. It's fun to watch. And
there's more.
Yeah. Downforce and power. That'll be fun.
All right, what's this? What's the next one here? GTD efforts.
Kelly Moss announcing they're going to have a two-car effort running the new GT3 R and the IMSA series. But more importantly, on that news article, it said they're eyeing a possible LMP entry in 25, mm-hmm. the 963. Mm-hmm. Which this is what I'm really hoping for. To relive the days of IMSA GTP, where you have these top, all these different manufacturers and customer teams running, these prototypes. Yeah. I got in on the tail end, like the last year of GTP. Got to see it, but certainly wasn't. Beginning of high school when the GTP heyday was on. So. I would love to see. I can't wait to next year with all these manufacturers to see how they do. Hopefully, Porsche is on top, but hopefully, it's also a very good show with all the manufacturers.
Yeah, that thing looks wicked. Wow. Yeah,
the 963 looks more geared to customer usage than the 919 was. Mm. 919 really.
Oh yeah, 919
wasn't built to be. It was pretty much all just run as a factory because it was so complicated.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Good for Kelly Moss. It's
very cool.
Homegrown team from the U.S. and North America. It'll be fun to watch them.
The more and more we talk about next year, I hope all of you are prepared. There's going to be so much going on in our world. I'm excited and overwhelmed all at the same time.
Yep.
All right. Let's talk about the brand store in Stuttgart.
You know, when I saw this, I thought you might have seen this when you were in Germany because it came out, I think, the week after you were in Germany.
The week after.
Week after, but I thought they might have, like, sneak peeked you into
I learned about this on, I was browsing Instagram and saw Jeff Swart.
Yeah.
Posted some photos on that.
So the brand store, that's, it's more like a, am I going to say lifestyle or, mm-hmm. you know, it's,
So is this, I'm wondering, is it like a Porsche design? Because they have Porsche design stores too, yeah. right?
Right. But this is Porsche.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
They say this is the future of dealerships as well, where it's a smaller, where you come in and you're not looking at a parking lot of cars that you want to drive one off the lot, but rather you come in and someone works with you and helps you choose your car, build your car. And that's what I know Porsche always wanted was where people order. And we were just talking about this on our database of how many special editions there are by Porsche and trying to keep track of them. And even if you don't get a special edition, you order a base Carrera, you can make it so individualized that you can maybe have one of one with those specs. You know, that's something that people always call up the national office asking. And we have given the same reply that Porsche does not release. How many cars they built with certain options. But odds are you could have a very limited run that were exactly the way you wanted. You just look at the options and do basic math, and you can realize how different, variations you can mm-hmm. make just on a stock base or S model. So this is a place to make the car your own. Can even get your door sealed with your name on it.
Exactly. Yeah,
I wonder how this would do in the U.S. You know, as we talked about, you know, we approach in general buying a car very differently.
We do, and like Manny said, you know, mostly around the world, this is how they normally do it, and you get exactly what you want. But in the U.S. and or North America, we're so intrigued with instant gratification. You know, so dealers order cars that are going to appeal to the widest masses. So you get cars that are not necessarily that special.
Yeah.
You get black, silver, you know, gray, because it, you know, they can sell them. They can move them. You get some crazy color. It sits on your lot for 6 months. It doesn't help the dealership. So that's why they don't order those.
Plus, they can put these type of stores in more urban areas mm-hmm. because you don't need a huge footprint to put cars or service.
Tesla already does it, I guess. So there's some mm-hmm. success in the U.S.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, I was thinking exactly that. There's the Tesla model where, you know, some people, like my uncle, didn't even go to the store. He just clicked everything online and went to go pick it up.
I think, I'm sure a lot of manufacturers, but I know I'm talking with some people from Porsche, they would love to have the model of Tesla. Because in Germany, they control the dealers. Mm. And here they don't.
Right.
So there's a lot of independence. And you know, they're always constantly fighting with the dealers that they adhere to the, you know, the image, this corporate image of that Porsche wants, and being able to have these little stores where people just order directly from Porsche, basically they control the message. And Tesla has, you know, shown that that probably is the future, at least with electric cars.
Yeah, and I think the younger generation, their buying habits, or the process of buying is, you know, us growing up, we always knew we had to go to a dealership, and we knew we had this like dance.
That's
when
you did the research.
Yeah, right? You did the research, and then you go in, you have this dance with the salesperson, and the salesperson dances over to the guy sitting up high in the sort of the manager's like look over area. And then you go back and forth, and then you say, well, I'm going to walk out if I'm not going to get $100 less on my deal. And then you walk towards your car, and then the guy comes out and pulls you back in. Well, I think my manager, like, all of that is just like, but it is not appealing to the younger generation.
Think about how much profit walked out the door because you couldn't say, hey, look at all these options you can choose. Now, what you should really get is this, this, and this, which has a high margin you can add onto it. Because like you said, you had to choose from what was available on the floor. And the salesperson, if he's anything worth their salt, they're going to make sure you don't go leave and order something and go to another dealer that has it. Yeah. They're going to convince you that what they have is the best, and the other options that you want, it you don't really want.
Yeah.
And now, you know, that's why they're the most profitable car company, because, you know, you can make it so individualized and order these options. You know, if you ever watch Nathan Mers and his videos he does for PCA, he loves these heavily optioned cars because they have options that most people didn't order, but, you know, are desirable now.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we want to give folks an update on upcoming events. Go with Unstock to start.
So I think we're almost we're nearing capacity. By the time you hear this, we might have reached. But if not, check the I guess registration should be closing. This comes out next Monday.
I think they still have a couple days after they hear this.
Yeah, check out motorsportreg.com for Unstock. As some of the cars that have registered, Laura, a lot of the cars are really, really unique. And if you don't have a modified car, you're more than welcome to come and hang out. And
it'll be a lot of fun.
No charge or no tickets necessary to come watch. It'll be a lot of fun. I guess West Coast Customs doing tours, you said?
Yep, we're doing tours. We'll have a DJ. We'll have this little beach area set up where you can just lounge around. We'll have food trucks. VIPs are
judging,
coming.
No judging. It's simply just come hang out.
Come hang out and have some fun.
Socialize, and it'll be a good way to kill 4 hours.
Yep, exactly. And then the week after that, on Friday, we'll have the LA Auto Show preview. And it's just coffee and preview of the Porsche booth. Registration for that event is October 19th. Same price as a regular LA Auto Show ticket. I believe it's $22.
Yeah, by the time you hear this, though, registration will be open.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, because that's happens tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Well, hopefully you got in, because there's only 200 and
sells out quick.
It sounds like a lot, 290, but anyone who's been here, we have a lot of repeat customers, if you will.
I would say 80% is probably repeats.
Yeah, they know that if you want to be able to sit in the Porsches, talk to a product specialist, without having the whole all of humanity right behind you, this is the best deal there is, because I've said it before, like 5 minutes before it opens up to the public, you literally see everyone from Porsche going to lock the cars up, and you know, you don't have the same access that you do during the member preview.
The other update has to do with Tech Tactics West, and we're still kind of in a flux of finding the facility that's going to host this. We're working with Porsche and some of our partners here, and we'll keep you posted. We are driven to have Tech Tactics West this fall, and we're just waiting for all these puzzle pieces to fit together, so stay tuned for that. The Zone Fest cruise, I've heard we're up to 600 Porsche owners or PCA members going on the cruise. We know we have some VIPs registered, such as Tim McNair, who's going to do some talks about detailing and stories. We have Nathan Mers. Many of Nathan Mers fans are listening here. again, incredible rates for you to be able to do an 8-day cruise, starting at $499 a person. And that's not $499 a day. That's $499 a person for 8 days worth of cruising. And like me, if you want to go on a cruise but not, you know, be completely bored because there's not anything else other than swimming and baking in the sun, here's your chance to go on a cruise and have Porsche content and be around PCA folks. And we have a really fun agenda. The folks in Zone 12 and Princess Cruise Lines, it's going to be an awesome time. So hopefully I see some of you guys on board.
Are you going, Damon?
Not that I know of.
All right. What else do we have?
Are you registered for, because right before the member preview at LA Auto Show, the media days.
Damon registered me, right?
Yep, I did. Have you received an email?
I'll have to check.
Yeah, just double check. And if it didn't go through, we'll still.
Okay, I'll check after this.
Yep. Yeah, because Porsche is going to have some new stuff, and we hope to get a lot of content out to our members with the
so that's on cars. Wednesday.
Wednesday, Thursday, but yeah. Probably then schedule Wednesday is the main day, I think, for new car reveals.
So we'll be there to get some of the latest intel on all the new models, recording it so that we can share it with you all on YouTube.
And usually it's a good time because Porsche will have their key people with that model there. Mm-hmm. And Damon did a great video last year about the GT4 RS, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I forget, it was like seven things about the car you didn't know.
When you're there in media days, for people who have never been there, they have basically it's journalists, a lot of them with, and I noticed last time they had a lot of cameras, and they're just getting contact. The public's not invited. It's obviously just journalism.
So. Local news. Yeah. This is, you know, international news, bloggers, influencers, anybody who has a big following online.
So the people from Porsche know that that's why you're there, and so they're doing multiple interviews.
This will be my first time doing the press day, so I'm excited.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice. It's a little less crowded than, you know, after the preview event on Friday, for sure.
Yeah.
Cool.
The food's not that great either.
But there's, we got to go to that place we went with that sandwich, the French dip place.
Oh, we're there to work, not to go.
No, but we got to eat.
I know, but that's after the.
Right.
They'll bring in lunch. They eat coffee and Red Bull all day, and I think they have like, you know.
That's all Damon needs.
Banquet sandwiches or, you know, lunch plate.
All right. We are at the top of the hour. Anything else before we sign off?
Check out the Macan GTS YouTube video, which dropped earlier this week, or last week, I should say, by the time you hear this.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. If you aren't currently a PCA member and own a Porsche, grab that VIN, head to PCA.org and sign up. And if you're looking for a Porsche, we have a test drive program. Same thing. Just go to PCA.org and sign up. Thank you for everyone that has given us ratings, and we look forward to hearing or reading your comments. Much appreciated with that. Remember to follow our podcast Instagram page. See behind the scenes photos, videos. Porsche Club Insider, all one word. And if you'd like, you can also send us an email at podcast@pca.org. Until next time, stay safe, and we'll catch you down the road.